With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Viplis, and you're either listening or watching this podcast on the Inside Carolina Podcast Network. So first off, thank you for your support. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or YouTube so you never miss out on any of the content that the team here at IC puts out. And while you're at it, leave a 5-star rating and review. If you haven't already, it takes hardly any time, and I know it helps us out a good deal. Also, speaking of support, we want to support the people that support us. So that's why I have to remind everyone about Johnny T-Shirt. Locally and alumni owned and operated, Johnny T-Shirt is the go-to place for all things Carolina apparel. When I went to this game this past weekend, I was just at Johnny T-Shirt. They hooked it up. They've got it all. The football T-shirts, the jerseys, the hats. As the weather gets cooler, they got the long sleeve, the sweatshirts, the jackets. You name it, they've got it. And they also have the best prices and even better customer service. And don't forget, Inside Carolina premium subscribers save 10% off their orders. All right, we've got a loaded show because today I've got my guys like every week joining me, former Letterman, Mike Ingersoll and EJ Wilson. Guys, North Carolina wins a huge game against Virginia Tech by a score of 56-45. I think somebody just scored again while I just said that. But the Tar Heels, they stay perfect, 3-0 in conference play. Mike, starting with you, what were your biggest takeaways from this game?
We obviously ran the ball better, and I think a lot of credit goes to the wide receiver core for that. The blocking downfield was exceptional, and they were able to take advantage of, frankly, a very depleted Virginia Tech secondary. So the running game, you know, 299 rushing yards is always impressive, no matter who it's against. I think we were benefit a lot by the fact that Virginia Tech ran some pretty vanilla looks on defense. And obviously, again, they're depleted in the secondary, so there's not much they could do defensively since the linebackers didn't have that backside support in the run game. So that was number one. Number two was I thought our offensive line did a really good job on the first level in terms of their blocking assignments. I was looking at Izudu especially since he was coming back. This is going to be his first game back. I wanted to see how he was going to play. We'll get to his performance later on. I thought overall it was positive, but there's some little things that he needs to work on that are just the result of having not played for so long and this being his first action. But again, I thought wide receiver blocking downfield, the running game generally looked great. Again, big props to the wide receivers for that. And the offensive line on their first level assignments looked real solid.
EJ, what about you? What were your biggest takeaways from this game?
I'll probably say the biggest takeaway is that we're not as deep on the defensive side of the ball as I thought we were, especially not on the defensive line. I mean, Vo Havoc not being there, I knew it was going to be – we weren't going to maybe show up like we have and put the great performance up against the run like we usually do without the big key part of our defense, and especially our defensive line not being there. But to give up the amount of yards that we did, and I think on some plays it's just kind of getting manhandled up front, and to see the same plays, the same formations that they're consistently getting in, and us not recognizing that and performing better on that, that definitely was kind of disappointing. That's another takeaway. I don't think that we adjusted well to that. I think when Hendon Hooker came into the game, I think he added a different aspect to them, their ability to pass the ball a little bit better, and I think that hurt us because we've been so hunkered down for the run that we got bit on a lot of the play action passes. And I think their tight end in particular really dominated the game. He dominated them. He set the edge blocking on a lot of those jet sweeps. They're like able to get outside. And you saw in some of their longer runs by Herbert, he's downfield making a block. He's catching the ball. He's running over people. He's actually making contacts with the defender. So I'll say that one, we're not as deep as we thought we are. Two, I think we got out physical. Three, we need to do a better job of recognizing certain formations and what teams are trying to get us in and adjust better, or you're going to see what we saw Saturday. Virginia Tech saw what was working, and they stayed in that formation for the most of the second half, and you see that they were successful on almost every drive that they had.
Yeah, my biggest takeaways from this game was first off, Carolina, they have the best running back duo in the country in Michael Carter and Javonte Williams. And I think when you look at that duo, it's such an easy formula to replicate on a week-to-week basis that you have to like Carolina's chances going forward. When if a game's going to get into a shootout, I think you have to like Carolina's chances. I thought Sam Howell, he looked to have his swagger back. We're going to talk about Sam Howell a little later. And then defensively, Carolina, they have a lot of things that they could work on. They were missing a lot of key players. But this defense with the offense, this offense performed like I thought they could perform at the beginning of the year. And if they're going to perform like that, they don't have to be perfect. They just have to be timely. You look at how they started the game, 3-3 and outs, the first four drives, I thought was impressive. And EJ, like you mentioned, at the end of the game, they were just on E, but they had played so well in the beginning of the game, getting off the field, that Carolina was able to build that kind of cushion. Now, it was kind of a game of runs where Carolina would build a cushion, it would get back, Carolina would build it up again. But I think the defense showed me enough. While it was a pretty bad game, they would be the first people to admit that it was a pretty bad game. But I think my biggest takeaway from this game defensively is Carolina just has to have a timely defense. They don't have to be this superior defense. But Mike, it felt as if UNC was kind of in this like wait and see mode because it wasn't playing the first two games with a healthy offensive line. Joshua Azudu, like you mentioned, he makes his season debut and Carolina puts up 656 total offensive yards. I think we saw the death of the lunch pail defense from Virginia Tech. That's going to be hard for them to keep toting that slogan around after that performance. But what did you see specifically up front along the offensive line that led to that kind of success, both protecting Sam Howell and also giving guys like Michael Carter and Javonte Williams huge running lanes?
Well, again, I don't want to bag on the offensive line for this game. I mean, what I'll say is, you know, I'll give a compliment sandwich here. So a positive, again, like I mentioned before, was that they played very well on the first level. That means their defensive line assignments in double teams, their single blocks on the front side of inside and outside zones, that sort of stuff. They did very well on that. They controlled the line of scrimmage, I thought, very well. They did not, however, across the board, get off on their second level assignments very well. What Michael Carter and Javonte Williams were able to do, because the first level was getting manhandled so well, they were able to beat free runners on the second level. So again, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, but the almost every offensive run is designed, just because it's a numbers game, to have one free runner. There's one guy you always got to beat. We call that the guy you got to book. All right. So you always got to book one guy. Carolina's problem against Virginia Tech was that they had two and three guys they were having to book. And if there were three free runners, two of them were on the front side of the play, which is problematic. Virginia Tech was, their defense was gassed, especially in the first half, because Carolina was putting together drives and was running the ball down their throat. They were also not in a position to really throw Carolina any exotic looks. So I would expect and hope that our offensive line would be able to control the first level the way that they did, because they really seen some pretty vanilla fronts. There was nothing spectacular being thrown at them. This did not look like a Bud Foster defense. And I think a lot of that was because the linebackers and defensive line didn't have second level help in run support. They didn't have safeties and corners that could come down and thud in the run game. Those linebackers really had to be the safety valve, because they were playing with a walk-on and a third stringer back there at safety. They were playing with backup corners. I mean, Virginia Tech was severely depleted in the defensive backfield. So I think that ultimately played to Carolina's advantage. So what the offensive line did very well was they controlled the line of scrimmage. What they didn't do so well was they didn't get on their second level assignments. Josh Azudu specifically looked like this was the first game he'd played. He transitioned there. He played more left tackle than left guard, which I was surprised to see. And we had a lot of offensive linemen get snaps. Ross Martin, you know, the great and powerful Ross Martin, actually gave me a breakdown today, and I'll read it to you here. Give me one second to find it. Our offensive line rotated in, I believe seven guys. Let's see here. I got the numbers right here. we had Marcus McKeith and Brian Anderson, Jordan Tucker, Izudu, Richards, Monolis, Johnson, and William Barnes all got snaps. And we're looking at 68, 68, 67, 59, 52. Monolis got 25. Johnson got 4 and Barnes got 1, right? So that's a lot of guys rotating in to the lineup. What I was encouraged to see was with all that rotation and with all those guys getting in the game and getting looks. And again, some of that was on jumbo packages and whatnot, but with shaking up the offensive line in the way that we did, we didn't see a whole lot of fall off. There wasn't a lot of drop off in terms of performance. Now, Josh's performance specifically, when I talk about game one jitters, when I talk about how you perform in the first game back, he missed a couple of things that ultimately didn't cost us, thank goodness. But he pulled around. I remember one time he was playing left guard. We ran 36 power. He completely whiffed on the Mike linebacker, who's his assignment as the puller. The reason that that 36 power, and it ended up being, I think it was Javonte, got us down close to the goal line. And it might've been our 21st point or our 14th point. It was our second or third score of the game. Running back got us down close to the goal line, got us to first and goal from, I think, the 3 or the 4 yard line. And that was because of the front side double team on that 36 power. So your right tackle, right guard were able to double that 3 technique to the backside linebacker. Josh pulled around and he completely whiffed on the Mike linebacker, but it didn't matter again because our running backs did such a good job all day of beating those free runners. The Mike there became the free runner and he wasn't supposed to be. But our running backs again did a phenomenal job of beating those guys. He also played pretty high. This is actually 2 plays later. I remember seeing him play pretty high down on the goal line. He played high all day long. So his pad level was relatively poor until the second half. I saw him make a lot of adjustments in the second half and they actually ended up playing pretty well at left tackle after making that transition mid-game. So those are the things that I was both encouraged and a little discouraged by based on what I saw. Offense, again, as a whole, I think EJ sort of touched on it. There were some problems. I think the biggest problem I saw from a team perspective is just we had a real hard time finishing that game. Thank goodness we had a 3-touchdown lead for most of the game.
Yeah, and I like the point you made about when Izudu whiffed and Williams made a miss. It seems like Javonte's always guaranteed to make at least the first guy miss. And I feel like that's something that Carter has kind of added to his game, that patience and that vision where he looks like a more patient running back this year and he's able to find those gaps more easily. But I wanted to go back to one of your key takeaways. I thought you made a great point about the wide receivers blocking out wide. As a former receiver, that's something I know a lot about. And unless the defense is stacked in the box, you guys up front are getting those like 5-10 yard runs. And if a play is going to spring out, it's because the receivers are actually blocking downfield. So when you see a guy like Michael Carter going 62 yards untouched, it's a good combination between the offensive line and then also Bo Corrales basically throwing his guy out the club. And I think Bo Corrales is definitely a guy worth mentioning when you're talking about the receivers blocking, because it's not something that's flashy. It's not something that's going to show up on the box score, but those are the little plays that are going to add up and make the difference for Carolina when they're trying to pick up these wins. And EJ, defensively, Carolina, they were missing guys like Raymond Vihasik, Storm Duck, and Jaquarius Conley. How much do you think those guys' absences led to the struggles for the Carolina defense? What can they do if those guys continue to miss time? And another thing that I thought was interesting with those guys out, it looked like Carolina was struggling to make rotations and getting guys on the field late and having to take timeouts at some points where it just seemed like they couldn't figure out the personnel groupings they were having to go in. So kind of, how do you think the injuries have played into that?
I think it's exactly what you said. I think these guys are ready to play. They know the game plan, but I mean, it's just kind of the flow of the game that you don't really get, especially with the amount of time that we've had off between games. I mean, you don't get the flow of looking and knowing when the personnel grouping is going in or where you're supposed to be in, or if it's dime or nickel or special blitz package that was set aside for you. You don't know when you're supposed to go in. So you're kind of used to kind of looking there, sitting in the days. I know that's what happened to me my redshirt freshman year when it was time for me to go in on a special package. I'm just kind of used to other guys going in. So I think that's why you saw some of those timeouts, some of those penalties when they were trying to speed up the tempo a little bit. But other than that, I don't think our defensive performance can really be blamed on those guys not being there. I do think that they would have probably shown a little bit more experience than just a little – the game reps that they have So I honestly think that a lot of this, the bad situations we got called in, especially some of the big plays that we gave up, was because we were so committed to stopping the run. I mean, a lot of those play action passes, a lot of that misdirection, it just happened because we were so hunkered down and ready to play the run. And I think overcommitting because Raven Vahasik wasn't there and we had to give as much support for our guys up front as we could. I mean, you have guys who are used to playing 30, 40 snaps a game, now playing 60, 70 snaps a game. And I mean, that's going to be tough from anybody, especially as you saw towards the end of the game, these guys start breaking down. There's no one in to rotate in. These guys are used to just playing 3, 4, maybe 5 plays at a time. And you have Virginia Tech driving the ball down the field. I mean, literally running the ball down our throats the whole second half of the game. These guys are getting tired. They're getting gassed. They don't have anyone else to come in. Even in the secondary, these guys are used to coming in on passing situations, specialty situations. Now you're asking them to come out here, tackle running backs, tackle the tight end, who obviously is in a different weight program than everyone else is, because he was just knocking our guys around. And I don't like to see tight ends do that as a defensive end. But I mean, it's just it's things like that that really play into it. I don't think these guys are any less prepared. I don't think they're any less talented, but it's just certain things that go into the ebb and flow of a game, especially when you're playing a Virginia Tech team that's ACC competition, a team that we've seen, and a team who obviously over the last few years we've developed quite a rivalry with. So I think that if this continues to go on, I do think these guys will get that experience and some of those hiccups will go away. So I'm not too worried. I do think the guys played relatively well. I think it was overall just not a good day for our defense. But as you mentioned, they were timely. It was a game of bursts, a game of spurts. And we held up and we did enough to win the game. And that's what it's about, winning the game.
EJ, at what point do you think that we actually have a tackling problem? The first two games of the year under a normal schedule, right? Normal conditions, you can typically – you can attribute at missed tackles, missed blocks, high pad level, like as an offensive lineman, right? Our footwork's maybe a little off. Maybe we're missing some blitz pickups, some blitz keys, things like that. All that stuff just kind of comes with getting the first, second game jitters out and really getting accustomed to playing football again. But at what point do you pull the ripcord and say, uh-oh, we actually do have a tackling problem, versus it's just early in the season, we had a wonky offseason, these guys didn't have a ton of prep time, that sort of thing, when it comes to tackling?
I think we've had a tackling problem longer than this season, man. I mean, I would agree.
Yeah,
you're looking at this game, and I mean, Coach Longos, he's putting these. I'm sorry, Coach. They're putting these people in the right position. They're there. They're just out of position. They're reaching. And they're trying to tackle with their arms. They're getting ran through. They're not being strong at the point of attack. They're not running through tackles like they're seriously trying to get someone on the ground. And that's just something that we've seen. I don't know if that's a toughness thing, a mental thing, but or maybe because some of these guys aren't used to playing that they're in this position and they're like, oh, shoot, I'm actually in the right position. Now I have to make the tackle. But you're seeing guys that have been playing for the last couple, 2, 3 years, who get significant snaps and who are lettermen, who are out here whiffing on tackles. So I think that it's a problematic problem that's going on through our program. I didn't want to make the alliteration too bad right there. So I tried to think of something to break it up last minute, but no, it's been playing in our program for the last couple of years. And at this point, I don't know how to fix it, man. I mean, there are only so many drills you can do. Yeah. It has been a wonky off season, but I mean, tackling is the same as tackling has always been. Offensive schemes change, offensive techniques change, but the art of tackling, getting someone on the ground, it's the same thing that you're going to do at 12 years old, that you're going to do when you're playing your last game in the NFL at 35, 36 years old. So it just kind of blows my mind, man.
Yeah. For the missed tackles, Carolina missed 19 tackles yesterday. It was Chaz Surratt missed one. Hollins missed one, Rucker missed one, Tamon Fox missed one, Zach Gill missed one, Trey Morrison missed one, Don Chapman missed one, Tyron Hopper missed two, Jeremiah Gemmel missed two, Eugene Asante missed two, Patrice Rene missed three, and then Cameron Kelly missed three. But I think it is an interesting point when you look at college football as a whole, like Alabama beats Ole Miss 63-48, an LSU defense, even though LSU is having a very weird year after winning the national championship, they're giving up like 45 points to Missouri, where I think it is fair to question what a lack of spring ball and what a broken up summer kind of did for defenses as a whole in college football, where every game you might as well just put your life savings on the over, because points are coming and points are coming fast. But if there is anybody who can get it turned around in Chapel Hill, I think it would be a defensive coordinator like Jay Bateman. Like I mentioned, I think he's putting people in the right spot. Carolina's defense started that game off well. It's something where they're going to have to recruit their way out of this. And I think that's really, really the only way out of this defensive depth issue is recruiting your way and hoping that you get guys like Raymond Vahasek and Storm Duck back this year to kind of bridge the gap in between that. But like I mentioned before, I think this offense is good enough where the defense just has to be timely. They don't have to do anything too crazy. They don't have to play Superman in games. Just try to win these shootouts and hope you make enough stops. But Mike, I want to get back to offense and talking with you for a second. The running backs for Carolina were so good that Sam Howell completing nearly 80% of his passes for 257 yards becomes almost an afterthought for this game, which is crazy to say. What did you see from Howell and kind of the game plan that Longo had in place for him to think that the true freshman we saw last year is back and here to stay for Carolina?
Well, I mean, it was a relatively pedestrian day for a Sam Howell that you're expect, you know, who threw whatever 36, 38 touchdowns last year and only a handful of interceptions. He's been on a 3-3 ratio coming into this game, right? 3 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. He got hosed on one. I believe it was it might've been to Michael Carter. It actually counted as a backwards pass. So it was really just a rushing touchdown.
Yeah.
So Sam should have, in all fairness, probably should have had one more passing touchdown this weekend against Tech than he got credit for. But, you know, Sam looked poised. He looks like he's a lot more patient than he was last year. And that makes sense, right? He's a year smarter. He's a year more seasoned. He's got, you know, all that experience from last year under his belt. Last year he was out there slinging around like he was Brett Favre. This year he seems to be picking his spots a little better. And he's trying to be a smarter quarterback and a more efficient quarterback. Now, I think Sam, you know, his numbers at 257, right, are not 257 yards passing for this game are not nearly what they could have been. Virginia Tech did an incredible job of keeping our offense off the field in the second half. Sam, I think at one point there was a graphic on ABC when the offense finally came back on the field. Sam had thrown 2 passes at that point in the whole second half, and we're 3 or 4 minutes left in the third quarter. So that offense just didn't get the ball in the second half. You know, credit to Virginia Tech, a timely surprise onside, and then they convert. You know, Hendon Hooker throws 7 completions, I think, and 3 of them were for touchdowns, right? I mean, they were efficient. They were churning the ball on offense when they had the ball, and they were wearing our defense down thin for the whole second half. So Sam just didn't have the opportunities to throw the ball in the second half as much as you'd like to see. And then obviously the last drive we got down near the goal line, that would have been a perfect opportunity for some type of wide delay or a boot or something to get Sam another passing touchdown, a couple more 7, 8, 9, 10 passing yards. And we just didn't do it because Mac Brown's a class act.
I would have ran it Sam up. Was able, for what it's worth, I would have ran it up.
Yeah. And after Dax Holifield, who I don't hold anything against him, the Peyton Wilson kid over at NC State, I got something against because he drank the Kool-Aid from the minute he decommitted and went over to State. Dax just chose a different school. I never had a problem with that. I did sort of have a problem with him trying to take Sam out there at the end of the game when we were trying to take a knee, but you know, to each his own, I guess. But Sam didn't have the stats that he could have had just because he didn't have the opportunities to throw the ball in the second half that I think we would have expected, because Virginia Tech actually stole a possession or two in the second half that should have been Carolina's. So I think he just looks more poised. I think he's more confident in the pocket. He's trying to be a smarter, more efficient quarterback as opposed to a stat padder. He's trying to win games as opposed to just outscore and get into these shootouts. He's trying to actually win games and be methodical and be cerebral about it. You can see him working through his process. He understands his checkdowns better. He understands his reads better this year. I'm impressed with what I see so far, but I am waiting to see, you know, the lighted up Sam Howell that we did see last year. I think he's due. Hopefully Florida State's maybe that coming out party.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Mike, I saw there was this one moment in the game where I wanted to kind of pin it and remind myself to ask you, so I'm glad I just remember this. When Sam Howell takes the cheap shot from Virginia Tech, you have a guy like Jordan Tucker, who's in Virginia Tech's players' faces, ready to kill for his quarterback. And I think that's because you have a guy like Sam Howell, who the team really looks up to as a leader, and he's always the first person who, when he has a good game, he's going to bring the praise right back to the offensive line when they're not going to be the ones getting praise from people talking outside of people like you in the building. And you have a guy like Michael Carter in that building too, when he's talking about, you know, people are telling him he's part of the best running back duo. He's like, you know what? I have a great offensive line. So as an offensive lineman, you're going to go out there and obviously play your hardest, but is there any extra motivation when you have players like Sam Howell and like Michael Carter, who are not only great football players, but just great people in the locker room? How much does that kind of help out a locker room?
Immensely. And you know that. EJ knows that. Players know that. Fans may not really understand what that leadership factor really brings to the table in terms of team camaraderie. There's very few players that I ever played with that I was willing to run through a wall for. I had some at the pro level. I had some in college. I had some in high school. I can say that TJ Yates was one of those guys for me. Sean Drone was one of those guys for me. Anthony Elzey was one of those guys that I played with. There are just some guys that you play with where it's like a big, I don't want to say big brother, little brother thing, but it is a true brotherhood type of situation. And Sam has cultivated that amongst his offensive personnel. You're right. Jordan Tucker was in guys' faces. That offensive line was ready to throw down, as well they should be. Your quarterback is your guy, and you need to protect him at all costs. There's been very few situations in my playing career where I've had a quarterback who I thought, think back to the movie Any Given Sunday, right? When Billy Beeman's talking about his invisible juice and his offensive line turns on him and lets him get crushed for a whole game. That stuff actually happens. Guys won't make it as obvious as it was in that movie. Oliver Stone did his best to, try and make football seem as real as possible. It's not as obvious as that, but guys are always out there trying to get theirs and play the best they can. But, if I had a quarterback once in a while that I played with, and this did happen, who might've got lit up a little, maybe we don't go over and we help him up as fast, or, maybe we don't pat him on the helmet and say, hey, man, you'll get it next time. As opposed to what you saw, like you just brought up from Jordan Tucker and those guys in people's faces, ready to throw down, ready to go to war for their quarterback. Running backs, same thing, right? Offensive linemen feel the same way about their running backs. Those guys need to make, if we make them look good, they'll make us look good. And if we're making each other look good, then the offense is going to be humming and everything's going to be going according to plan. And we're going to be successful. So yeah, there is a lot of that. I'll give one quick story. EJ will appreciate this story. We were playing Rutgers in 2010 up at Rutgers. We get to the end of the game. Greg Schiano's the head coach. Remember him, EJ? Greg Schiano's the head coach. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome guy. We get to the end of the game. We're running victory formation. Greg had this thing that we later found out was called fumble. It was an actual play where he would line up basically two nose tackles, two defensive tackles on either shoulder of the center. And their job during victory formation was to blow up the center's shoulders off the snap, the thought being that the snap would be short, would hit the center's butt, we'd fumble the snap, and at the same time, simultaneous with those shoulders getting blown up, they would wrap the middle linebacker right down the middle, and he would recover the fumble. Rutgers, the theory then, Tampa later we found out, that he tried to implement, if you remember the old Tom Coughlin, Greg Schiano spat at midfield after the Giants game in 2012. That's what that was about. The idea was you get the ball one more time and you get one more possession. Well, Rutgers did that to us in 2010 up in Piscataway. And I remember coming, I remember seeing it happen, and TJ almost broke his foot on that play. And I remember me and Alan Pelk both coming down the line and ear holing the defensive tackles that had just blown up. I believe it was Cam Holland was playing center, had just blown Cam up. And we started throwing punches under the pile. Those guys were looking up at us, much like Roy Miller looked up at a couple people a few times when he had to do this in Tampa, and apologized, said, "Hey man, it's not me. It's, you know, not my fault. I was told to do it." And at that point we understood that it wasn't Rutgers personnel trying to play dirty. It was just something their coaches had taught them, but that sort of stuff exists, right? We had that love for TJ, and, it's important, and I think it's a great point that you bring up, that it's clear that Carolina's offense today has that love for Sam and for those running backs.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of just high character guys like Sam Howell, like Michael Carter. Every press conference Michael Carter has, it's must watch for me just because of how positive he is, and, you know, just the energy he kind of puts out. Just being such a positive person. And I think it's also a combination of, this is a team where a large part of them, they went through 5 wins in 2 seasons. So they've been through the lows, and now they're going through the highs together. And it's something where you could tell how tight this team is, and it's not something that can be broken up easily. And I think it also speaks to kind of the culture that Mac Brown is building here, where it is a family. It's cliche to say that a locker room is a family, but when you see a guy like Sam Howell taking a cheap shot and Jordan Tucker running up, that's where you're seeing that family aspect come into play. And before Saturday, this had been a series the Hokies had dominated. Moving forward, EJ, do you think this is the new norm for the series, with Carolina coming out on top at the end?
I hope so. I mean, I saw this as a trend. I thought that was kind of, once we went down in 2009 and beat them there, I knew that things were kind of changing. I knew that they were starting to look at our program a little bit differently. I mean, and you fast forward to now, some of the epic battles that we've had. I mean, going down and beating them at home during Frank Beamer's last game. I mean, some of the things that have gone on in recruiting that some people know about, some people may not know about, but it's the dirty game. You got to play dirty to win it. But I do think that this is going to be the new trend. I think that when we were playing, Virginia Tech was the team to beat in the ACC. They were consistently going to ACC championship games, representing us in the Orange Bowl. And I think we kind of put that chip on our shoulder and passed that attitude down to this team now, that said, hey, we're the new kids on the block in the ACC. We're going to be the ones that are going to be playing in those championship games. So I do think it is. I think the way we're recruiting, I think the way Coach Brown has kind of infused energy into that program, and just the talent that we have coming in, I do think this is going to be the new norm. I mean, I hate to say this, no discredit to Coach Fuente, but this is not Coach Beamer's Hokies. I mean, even talking to some people in Virginia and Virginia Tech alum, they don't look at this program the same way. I mean, they honestly don't even call that defense the lunch pail defense anymore. I mean, it's just a different attitude around that program. So I do think that we need to come out, we need to be the aggressor, and if we set the tone in the beginning of the game like we did this game, I think that the program's become front runners. Even though they did fight back a little bit, we were still able to get 3 touchdown leads on them a couple of times. So, I mean, hopefully this is the new norm. This will be the only new norm I welcome.
And we've always had rosters full of Tidewater area guys, right? I mean, we've always had some of the Hampton area Virginia guys. You know, our roster, I mean, you're from Virginia, right? Carolina has always recruited Virginia very well. Ronald Curry, Lawrence Taylor, those types of guys, and they all come from that same area. And that's the area that Virginia Tech always recruits the hardest. And those games that we always played, I mean, you're talking, think back to, you know, I wasn't there, but I was in high school. I remember watching it, the night game, 2005, your freshman year, EJ. That was a close game. You know, remember Jesse Holley drops that ball right going in a half time to give Carolina the lead. That was a tight game that whole game. You know, we had 2008 was a tight game. That was at home. 2009, we obviously beat them. 2010 was a tight game for most of the game until we made some mistakes in the second half and it got away from us. But those have – and 2011, another one, Ryan Houston in the snow game. I think we had a fumble on the goal line there. 2007 was a fumble on the goal line that we should have recovered. And Garrett Reynolds almost recovered in the end zone. So they've always been very tightly played games between us and Virginia Tech. And the one thing that I've always told people is that the guys that played at Virginia Tech, and I had some guys from my high school that I played with in high school that, you know, here in Charlotte that went up to Tech and we played against each other in college. But the guys that played at Tech were always cool. Like it was a rivalry and there was a lot of talking and jawing during the games, but it was always respectful. Like there was always a mutual respect there. That was not something that we had with some other teams, State, Virginia. I mean, that Tennessee bowl game in 2010 comes to mind. You know, there's some teams that like, you just don't have that level of respect with. But Virginia Tech, those guys were always cool. It was always a tight game, always hard fought. And there was a lot of mutual respect on both sides. At least that's what I felt. And I think that our rosters being so similar, Tech recruits Charlotte very well. We recruit the Tidewater area very well. To have the mixture between the two states, I think made us much more parallel in terms of not necessarily programs or program trajectory, because EJ hit the nail on the head. Virginia Tech was the team to beat in the ACC. They were consistently going to ACC championship games. We were looking up at them at all times. We were the little brother. But in terms of actual legitimate rivalries, I always viewed Virginia Tech as more of a rivalry than maybe some of our traditional ones. You know, maybe more of our traditional geographic or conference aligned rivalries were historically, right? Just because those games were always so tight, they really did fit the definition of a rivalry in terms of one team successful, then the next is successful, and you guys are so closely mirrored in terms of philosophy and personnel and things like that. I always viewed Virginia Tech as more of a rivalry than I think it got credit for.
Yeah, outside of NC State, for me personally, from when I was playing, I would say Virginia Tech was that number two team that I kind of looked at as the rival. And speaking of NC State, this game, it kind of reminded me of the NC State game from last year where Carolina is already winning the recruiting battles. And now we're seeing those wins on the recruiting battles now translate to wins on the field.
And that's a great point.
I think this is, if you're looking for a turning point in a series, I think this is where you could look at a turning point like last year's NC State game where Carolina has the chance to leave a team like Virginia Tech, leave a team like NC State in the rearview mirror when they're chasing, you know, right now they're competing with Virginia Tech, but Carolina wants to get to a point where they're competing with Clemson. I think this is the moment where you could kind of leave them in the past because Carolina's recruiting, I think they're somewhere in the top 15 the past two classes. Virginia Tech, in this class alone, they're in like the 70s, which is kind of unprecedented for them. And what Frank Beamer built there for 29, 30 years, Fuente, this is where coaching matters, I think. Fuente, I think he's kind of in over his head, kind of the same way Dave Doran looks like he's in over his head at NC State, where if you're a Carolina fan, you want these guys at those schools for as long as possible while you have a guy like Mac Brown so you could continue to build that gap in between these schools. But leads to a natural segue talking about teams that have fallen off. Carolina going to Tallahassee this week to play Florida State. Carolina's first time there since 2016 when Nick Weiler made the amazing field goal, chopped his way around the field. Exactly. If you're Carolina, how do you avoid the trap of reading your own press clippings? Right now, Carolina's number five in the AP poll. How do you avoid reading your press clippings of people telling you how great you are and prepare for a team that has been underwhelming in recent history, Mike?
Well, I mean, Carolina needs to be realistic, right? They have been benefited, and we talked about this last week. They've been benefited tremendously from the fact that the Big Ten schools weren't initially ranked, the Pac-12 schools weren't initially ranked. I mean, we are playing great football right now. We have a very talented Washington. We're playing good football. We're playing good football right now. We have a very talented roster. It's, again, like EJ pointed out, not as deep on the defensive side as we thought it would be. But we've got a terrific quarterback. We have an offensive system that will just put up points and churn up yards. I think we're in a position where we can play with most anybody. But we are not Ohio State. And the fact that Ohio State is ranked one spot behind us is only because – Ohio State hasn't played any games. Their first game for the Big Ten is on October 24th. Sunday, October 25th, Ohio State is most likely going to leapfrog Carolina, whether we continue to win or not. I mean, that's just the natural order of things. Now, Carolina keeps winning, right? I mean, who knows what's going to happen? Because, again, we did benefit from a preseason 18 ranking. We shot up to number 8, again, because we had some teams losing in front of us, wonky offseason, teams like Oklahoma, you know, dropping two games that you don't expect to happen, and guys in front of you, you know, teams in front of you losing. This is sort of the recipe for some quick success, some quick confidence to be built, and to shoot up the rankings and put yourself in a position to really be in contention for the college football playoff, but certainly for the conference. Carolina, you know, should be favored in every game leading up to the Notre Dame game. You know, and they close the season out. They got Notre Dame and Miami back to back. Those are going to be two really tough games. If they win one of those games or split one of them, I think Carolina, the way the season will likely shake out, will most likely still have an opportunity to be in that ACC championship game. If it comes down to Carolina and Notre Dame, they're going to have to beat Notre Dame to have that tiebreaker. It's just how it's going to have to be. But I can foresee Notre Dame dropping a game this year. What happens when you go down to Florida State now? I mean, I had a conversation with somebody today, a Carolina alum, someone I went to school with, and my point to them was, this might be the worst Florida State team I've ever seen. The second worst Florida State team, 2009 with Bobby Bowden. And we lost to them on Thursday night at home, and we were ranked, and we were substantially better. I think we had a 24-point lead at halftime. I can't remember what it was, but I mean, the game was gone. We were running the ball down their throat. We were doing whatever we wanted offensively. And then the second half, we were the reason Christian Ponder got drafted in the first round. And we somehow ended up losing that game. This is a trap game for Carolina, just like that was a trap game for us. First Thursday night game in Chapel Hill, all Navy uniforms, Lawrence Taylor's first time back in Chapel Hill since he left in the 80s. The hype was very real back then. And we ended up dropping an egg. Carolina has an opportunity here to keep the momentum going. And Florida State, when I say they're the worst Florida State team I think I've seen in recent memory, maybe ever, they still dropped, 26 points on Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's a good football team. I mean, they're a really good football team. They are ranked, frankly, where I think they should be, or at least within two or three spots. Carolina's got to do everything they can to stay humble, understand the circumstances that got them to where they are in terms of the rankings. Also, don't pay attention to the rankings, because the only thing they should care about right now is beating Florida State and winning the games they're favored in. And frankly, getting to that Notre Dame at the end of the season unscathed, right, to have a shot at that ACC championship. Because in order to do the things that they want to do this season, right, in order to take that next step, they're going to have to see Clemson again for the second time in 5 years in that ACC championship game. It's just going to have to happen. And anything short of that, right, should feel like a failure to these guys, because this team is, on the offensive side of the ball, they're loaded. And the only way they're going to lose is if they beat themselves. So, you know, this is a trap game because Florida State has a little more confidence coming out of South Bend. They played a decent game. Is Florida State winless, or do they have one win?
I believe they have one win. I watched this game.
They lost to Jacksonville State. Did they beat Georgia Tech?
They did beat Jacksonville State.
They lost to Georgia Tech.
They won 41-24. They've lost to Georgia Tech. They got blown out by Miami, and they lost to Notre Dame. They had a big comeback win against Jacksonville State.
Yeah, that's right. They were down. So that Florida State is looking for an FU win. They're looking for something to get themselves back on track. And you know, Mike Norvell, with his apparently terrible coaching philosophy and his inability to relate to his players and his coronavirus, is down there right now telling those players that you can knock off Carolina. They're not that good. Just go turn on the tape. they're going to blitz Carolina. They're going to throw exotic looks at them, and they're going to throw the offensive line off. And they're going to try to keep the ball as long as they can on offense and wear the defense down, because that's the formula they've seen so far through three games to beat Carolina. That's what's gotten us on our heels. So to avoid a letdown, Carolina's, like you said, they got to stay out of the press. They got to not worry about the rankings. The rankings are completely irrelevant. The only rankings that matter are the college football playoff rankings, and those haven't come out yet, right? So you need to just go ahead and play ball, and you need to win as many games as possible until you get to that towards the end of the season here, so you can put yourself in a position to be in that ACC championship game. And it starts with going down to Tallahassee and stealing another one in Tallahassee, which, you know, would be the third time ever, but it would also be the third time in the last three trips, right? Because 2010, 2016, we hadn't been back down there before 2016, right? And now 2020. So we're looking at the last three trips to Tallahassee after having never beaten Florida State in Tallahassee are wins for Carolina. That would be huge. And that's the kind of thing they're going to need to focus on, taking this one game at a time and just beating Florida State if they're going to remain successful. It's really just staying down to earth.
EJ, before you answer how you would kind of handle it as a player, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but I think it is harder to fall for the trap game when you have a large group of guys that remember what the locker room is like after five wins in 2 years. And for this week, for Carolina's offense, it's how I would kind of handle it. It's, can you prove it again? And the defense, they're going to want to get back out there after having a pretty bad taste in their mouth, where everybody this week is talking about how great the offense is and how you guys are a big question mark with key players out. But EJ, as a former player, how would you kind of handle being in the locker room this week when everybody's telling you how great you are and you have an underwhelming Florida State team next on your schedule?
I think kind of to build on you guys' points, I mean, this isn't one of the better Florida State teams, but it still is a good program. I mean, no matter – I mean, some of the teams that they played, Miami's having a good season, a great season this year. Yeah, they routed them, but as Mike mentioned, they did hang in there with Notre Dame. So, if I'm a player and I'm going in, I'm the 8th-ranked team, it's almost completely reversed of what's usually the situation when we go down to Florida State. I mean, they're perennially – probably a few years removed, they're usually a top 10, at least top 15 ranked team. And we're usually going down here and we're trying to blow this prize. We're trying to kill their momentum of their hopes of playing for a national championship, when honestly, realistically, no matter how janky the rankings may be, we still legitimately have a chance to play for that college football playoff and for a national championship this year. So I think the guys need to have the attitude. I know I personally would have the attitude of, just like Mike mentioned, I mean, this is a chance to get a very rare thing in Carolina history. It doesn't matter if this team is facing suspensions, if they got in a death penalty like SMU did. It's a chance to leave your mark on Carolina history. And as a college football player, your mindset should be to go out there every day to try to make a change and make your name recognizable. As Mike mentioned, there are Lawrence Taylors, Julius Peppers. There are a lot of great names that play football here. Wouldn't you want your name etched in history with them? If we ever redo the Hall of Honor, would you want to be up there near one of the greatest home victories when we were ranked in the top 10? We went down to Florida State and did something that we ever did. The talk, but 20 years later, the conversation behind that is not going to be, oh, well, Florida State was down, they weren't having a good year. It's going to be, this team went down to Tallahassee and had an impressive win against a perennial ACC and national powerhouse on their way to hopefully ACC or national championship, something that's never the ACC championship, something never happened in about 50 years of Carolina, and a national championship, something that's never happened. So that will be my mindset. Especially for me playing defensive line in Carolina, I mean, I played there and got drafted, and look at the other guys I played with. I'm admittedly also ran when compared to those guys, and I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not ashamed about that at all. So you want to do anything you can to make an impact, and I think this needs to be their mindset. They need to not fall for the trap. They need to know that, hey, we need to go down here and make a statement to show that we can win on the road, to show that we can put a complete game together.
One point I'll close out on. Carolina heads down to Doak Campbell this Saturday. Last time Carolina went down there, FSU had won 14 straight at home against Power 5 teams until Weiler's kick. They're 9-9 since. Was that the kick that broke Florida State? 7 p.m. kickoff on ESPN, Carolina versus Florida State. Looking forward to breaking it down with you guys next week.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Vip.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.